I'll let you know that I'm used to people not listening to me. So thank you for coming. I think we're a few minutes late getting started. My name is Chris Bortlick. I work for Microsoft as a SharePoint collaboration technical specialist. We're here to talk about the top 10 ways that SharePoint will help drive adoption. So this is my background. I've been with Microsoft about 5 years. In my role, I work with enterprise customers and partners that are in the Northeast. I'm considered a SharePoint insider within Microsoft, which means I get to work often with the product engineering and marketing team, both to give feedback and also to kind of look into where we're going with the products. Before joining Microsoft, I was a customer myself for about 14 years. So I worked for large financial services companies in particular. And I was fortunate enough to work with Scott Jamieson and Sue Hanley, did a little bit of the SharePoint 2010 book with them, and I'm actually a full co-author with them on the 2013 book. Any of you go to Sue Hanley's session just before this one? She wants the book purple. I know. I didn't update it. She's going to get her way. So we're going to have a purple book, but I didn't have a chance to update the slides. So Sue may be making a cameo as well, so I better be on my best behavior. So this is what I was saying before about I'm used to not being listened to. So that's my wife and our 4 daughters. I've got an 8-year-old, a 5-year-old, and 2 16-month-old babies. And yes, they're all girls. And I've heard lots of jokes about getting guns, learning to box, et cetera. So I need a lot of money and a lot of help for the next 20 years. All right, so what we're going to talk about, and hopefully why you all have come today, is talking about how adoption happens, key scenarios that end users care about. I'm going to have a summary of the top 10 list of the top 10 areas that I think will help drive adoption, some critical success factors, and then some suggestions and resources. Sound good? All right. All right. Just by a show of hands, how many of you consider yourselves in IT? Most of you? How many of you are actually consider yourself in the business, like line of business? All right. Good mix. And how many are kind of in a role where you're kind of in between the two? You're kind of a liaison between the two roles? Okay. Any of you on SharePoint 2013 yet? Any early adopters? 1, 2, 3? Okay, cool. So we're going to talk very briefly. So we have basically 3 sessions this afternoon that are somewhat related. So Sue Hanley, who many of you went to ahead, did a great session on different strategies and tactics for driving adoption. Mine's going to be a bit more around capabilities, so scenarios that the product might help drive. I agree with Sue and believe that no technology typically will drive. And there, Sue. Hey, Sue. Sue, I already got feedback about you wanting the purple book, so you win. But no technology really in and of itself will drive adoption. So a lot of the techniques and best practices that Sue shared really will apply. Again, I'm not going to cover those. I'm going to focus more on the technology. And then after my session, Todd Ray is doing a session around how to measure adoption. So different ways of measuring ROI. So metrics, things that you can look at. So, often just having a large number of users or a large amount of content doesn't necessarily mean you have great adoption. It could mean you have poor governance, right? Because you have a lot of sites and a lot of documents. So Todd will talk through some best practices there. So this is a chart that many of you probably have seen something like this. This kind of a bit of a, distribution of adoption, or kind of you've seen different S-curves and different adoption patterns. Anyone never see a chart like this before? Most of you have seen this, right? So the key point here is that you're going to find that there are some people in the first 2.5% or so that are really the innovators. They're the people that, regardless of whatever new thing that goes out there, they're just going to flock to it. They want the newest, latest, coolest technology, and really they're going to be the ones that are going to jump on it. You're going to then find these early adopters, people that are a bit selective, but they're the ones that others within the organization kind of check in with. So, gee, I see that so-and-so is using this, they might talk with them. Then there's kind of the early majority, and that's really making up the first half of folks, right? People that might take a little bit more time, but then once they do that, they're willing to embrace new technology. We're going to talk a bit about how you might work with and identify and kind of capture the attention of that first 50%, and then how you might be able to use your success and best practices with them to then drive towards the late majority, and yeah, there'll be some laggards that will come kicking and screaming with some of the new things. And, I've worked with large companies, realize that there's a different set of demographics out there, right, where even in some companies today, people are resisting email and they're still printing things out and writing on them. And, there's always going to be that population. But there's also a lot of folks that I think will gravitate towards some of the new capabilities. So the magic formula that I've often seen for adoption is A equals V greater than C. So if any of you came to my session last year with Scott Jamieson on adoption, you might have seen this formula. Just for a copy of the 2010 book, which is in green, anyone know what A equals V greater than C means? Value greater than cost? Nope, another one of that. Adoption equals value, yep. So what's the last part? Greater than cost? Nope. Change? Did I hear change? All right. If you want to come by and pick it up, I'll put it here, or I'm not going to stand next to that. But really, adoption is value greater than change. So for people to adopt something, they typically have to see that there's value in changing. So they're not going to just do it often just because it's a new cool technology. And again, I experienced this for 14 years in IT. We'd do all these great projects. We'd roll it out. And then just people wouldn't adopt it. And often it's tough to get people to change their behavior. They have to perceive that there's value in them changing. Make sense? So adoption often occurs when, and again, Sue hit on some of these topics, so, and I agree that it's really about solving a problem. It's not just about the newest, greatest, coolest technology. If you're doing technology, whether it's SharePoint or any other technology, you're not fundamentally solving some business problem. You're often not going to succeed. People in finance, HR, marketing, what have you, they don't wake up every morning thinking about how they can use SharePoint better. They think about the different scenarios that they need to accomplish their task and get their job done. You know, Sue often talks about what's in it for me, everyone's favorite radio station, right? Again, thinking about, you know, I look at even trying to influence my children, even though they're 8 and 5 and the babies, unless I find a way of appealing to their interest and kind of persuading them, yeah, I can use the carrot and stick approach and punish them and take things away from them. But unless I can get them to want to do something, it's often difficult to actually make them want to use something and change their behavior. It's often about finding a better way or a different way of doing things. So sometimes just because we think it's a better way of doing things, people are often saying, well, I've been doing something the same way for 5, 10, 15, 20 years. You know, why is social, as an example, a better way of doing something? I've been getting along just fine. The company's making money. I've been successful. So why, you know, it's great that these millennials come in and they want to do social, but why do I want to do social, as an example? So it's, again, not just telling them, but helping to demonstrate and exhibit why it may be a better or different way of doing things without making them feel like the way they've been doing things in the past is necessarily wrong, right? Because you don't want to insult people and say, hey, we've got a better way of doing things. Well, yeah, I've been doing just fine. You know, why do you think that your technology, your process is going to make me more successful? And then again, incentives and rewards. So inside of Microsoft, we've had a number of different successful programs, such as our Academy solution, which is our internal podcasting solution. And when we did that, and this was back around SharePoint 2007, we started off by trying to reward folks for uploading and posting videos. And we had a number of different incentives where people that contributed content, people that got the most downloads, the highest rated content, actually got points that they could redeem in a Microsoft company store and things like gas grills, gift cards, etc. We've since kind of moved away from doing that because the solution kind of took off on its own. But initially, to kind of feed things, you guys are hearing me okay? I'm hearing the mic kind of cutting in and out. You guys okay? Good? But initially, to try to seed things and get people to come to the platform, we had to incent people. We also try to find, when we're implementing something new like a community, actually seeding some content, having people that are actually in there participating and driving the change. So we've had an external Yammer network within Microsoft that we use to work with customers and partners. And initially, I spent a lot of time actually seeding things and seeding questions. And again, kind of recognizing, collaborating, liking comments, et cetera, to kind of encourage others to participate in the community. So what I've chosen to do here is to take 4 different business scenarios. And these are scenarios that I've often seen my customers want to do, kind of low-hanging fruit, if you would. And what I've tried to do is take all the different capabilities, the technologies, the features, and the functions, and try to wrap them around business scenarios that I think you could go back and probably apply within your company, and then map it back to the technology to say, okay, if you need to solve this problem, these are the capabilities you may want to consider. But I've often found that, you know, talking to someone in the business, you know, it's not so much about news feeds and blogs and wikis, and it's about solving a business problem and showing them a different way of doing things. So the first scenario that I want to walk through is A person that is trying to answer a question or solve a problem. So in today's world, you know, they might do it via the phone, they might walk over to a cubicle, they might see someone they know. But often, especially in large companies like Microsoft, we're geo-distributed all around the world, 100,000 employees. How do you go ahead and find someone that may not necessarily be there with you? So we're going to walk through kind of getting answers. So I know many of you were in the keynote. You probably all have been in a lot of different social sessions, and hopefully, you know, we're going to cover a few different things than what hopefully you've seen throughout the week. But really, what I want to focus more on is the business problem, the scenario we're trying to walk through. So you've seen the news feed, right? Anyone here has not seen the news feed by now? All right. So really, what we've done inside of Microsoft is we've gone to SharePoint 2013 and Office 365 back since July. We've been using the news feed extensively, as well as some of the community features, for doing things like finding answers to questions, for posting defects and bugs and feedback, and for identifying subject matter experts. So as you probably have seen in the earlier demos, I can go in there and say, I'm looking for, you know, help with SharePoint and get those suggestions on the keywords. And what I'm finding often is having different people that are following me, following a tag, has serendipitously helped me to discover and find other people within the company, either people that are in the product team that are working on a capability. So we'll put things in with a hashtag around bug or defect or feedback. I found others in the company that have similar roles and interests as I do, going in there and actually discovering me and following me. And really, you know, we found that social adoption started to take off within our company as we started to integrate social into other things. So integrating comments into our intranet. So when people are viewing and reading articles, they're actually commenting on things, and then that's showing up inside of the newsfeed. So I'm not going to social as a separate destination. We're embedding it directly into the context of the task of what they're doing. So you've seen things already, I'm sure, about posting videos. So I know many of you saw in the keynote posting a video link to SharePoint videos, but we can also go ahead and post in a link to a video that is actually playing outside of SharePoint, in this case, a video that might be coming from YouTube. So go ahead and discovering and sharing content related to, ideally not just Bon Jovi, who I was disappointed didn't perform the song last night, but you know, go ahead and posting things like training videos and resources that they're out there discovering and having them play in line. Doing things like at mentioning people, posting things directly into a specific team site that I might be a member of. So if I want to target things related to the marketing campaigns, and going ahead and very quickly having the ability to post something that is not just in the everyone feed that anyone within the company can discover, but put something into a private team site that people that are within that team site for marketing can see that conversation, and others that are not part of that team site, that conversation gets hidden from their view. So doing security trimming to actually hide that from people that aren't part of that scenario. But we also find that for getting answers, a big part of that is actually using community sites. So I know that this is a bit of an interesting topic. Sue and I have debated and talked about this as well, around things like badges and reputations, and are you driving and rewarding the right behavior? I found a lot of times that people, even in large companies like Microsoft and others, were very competitive folks, and having the ability to go up the leaderboard, if you would, and be identified as a contributor makes me want to go in and participate more in the community. I don't know if that's, again, the right behavior necessarily drive, if it's really around me wanting to be a better contributor. But what I'm finding is that having the ability to identify somebody as an expert, the ability to go ahead and assign those different points. And what you may know is that you, as the person creating the community or managing the community, can do things like assign how these points get allocated. So if you don't just want to assign a lot of points to people that are very chatty, that are just posting a lot of questions or posting a lot of replies and they're trying to game the system, you can assign and reward more points if their response was marked as a best reply. So you can actually have some knobs to kind of tweak around how much value you assign to certain contributions within the community. So one of the great things that I found, again, from a scenario of getting answers, is I can go ahead and post something within this community site and say, you know, I have a question on the marketing campaign. And just say, you know, when do we launch? And I can go ahead and identify this as a question. And I can also go ahead and assign this to a particular category that this might be related to sales. And now, as I'm posting these questions, I can go ahead and filter different views within here to see the hot conversations that are trending, the most active conversations, the ones that I've posted, the ones that are marked as unanswered. And again, unanswered, this is an important thing to point out. Unanswered really doesn't mean that it doesn't have answers. It means it does not have a best reply. So meaning you might have a conversation that has, like this design specs as an example, has two replies. But if I go ahead and say, show me things that are unanswered, that question is still going to show up because there is no response marked as a best reply. The person asking the question can mark a response as a best reply, and as can the moderator within the forum. So you can have these discussions kind of moderated. So again, we're using these more within Microsoft to try to move folks out of using email. And again, we're finding that there are some laggards. We're a very email-intensive company. We still have a lot of people that are using email, you know, distribution lists. They haven't necessarily just flocked over and gravitated towards the community because, again, for them, it's trying to figure out what's the value. Why should they change their behavior? And we've tried to communicate to them around making things more discoverable. Again, identifying and finding other subject matter experts, thinking about folks that might be new to the company that may not have been on that conversation, that discussion. But from a spirit of kind of finding and discovering people and topics, the discussion forum and the community sites are really things that we're finding are becoming more and more beneficial to driving folks to want to use SharePoint. The other benefit of this really gets into search. So as I go in here and I start to search for things related to marketing campaigns, and I specify I want everything, I can go ahead and very quickly discover not just documents, and as I look at these documents, I can see as I hover over this, I can jump directly to sections within the document. I can follow the document, which socially you can follow a person, you can follow a tag, you can follow a document or a site. And again, that's always helping you to discover not just answers to your questions, but discovering new people and conversations that you may want to participate in. To go ahead and find people that might have some expertise related to marketing campaigns, so identifying other subject matter experts. But one of the newer capabilities is looking at social conversations. So looking at finding newsfeed posts, but also finding forums. So in this case, discovering the marketing topics that are going on within a community. So one of the values of exposing this information to others is I can discover the active communities that are out there, see the members that are out there, see questions that are out there, find answers that have best replies marked. But another big part of this in trying to drive that change in behavior is realizing that maybe everyone that's working within there isn't necessarily going into the community sites all the time. So you look at things like Yammer and some of the other social tools, even Facebook in the other days, and LinkedIn. A lot of the way they drove folks to the platform was by pulling them in with emails. So trying to bridge the gap between folks that are participating in these communities with folks that are actually getting that email alert, which is then pulling them back into it. So with this example here, I actually went ahead and posted something within my newsfeed. And actually, in this case, I was using the SharePoint mobile app to post a photo of two of my colleagues. And I got a response that, in this case, Garth actually replied to something that I had posted there. So I now know without going into the newsfeed that someone has answered my question, someone has replied to something that I've done, someone is following me. So again, with the idea that as I'm following people, as I'm responding to conversations, people are going ahead and getting email alerts that are encouraging them to come back. So it's not just about dropping a document, dropping, you know, something within SharePoint and then going away. It's trying to find a way of engaging people and making it a bit more viral where they're getting these announcements, communications, email alerts, et cetera, that are hopefully pulling them back into things. So for me to kind of net things out, In the scenario around finding answers, the key capabilities I think that will help to maybe get people to try something different when they're looking at getting an answer are things like the newsfeed, right? Posting questions to the newsfeed, following hashtags, following others. It's that community site that, again, gives you a forum for having a much more structured conversation with other subject matter experts. A big tip that we've discovered with inside of Microsoft is we found it better to have fewer communities with more members than to have many communities with fewer members, right? So we'd rather have 5 vibrant communities, each with 100 members in it, than to have 100 communities with 5 members in it. So some of the companies I've worked with are looking at human resources scenarios, or maybe think about recruiting or onboarding scenarios, or maybe cases where there are particular folks that are going through relocation, maybe going on an expat assignment, and having communities where people can talk about HR policies and procedures like those, and maybe have different topics or groups within there, and trying to drive people to that community that may not otherwise collaborate and find each other. So traditionally, you'll think about things potentially around functional areas, engineering, sales, marketing, that it might make sense, especially if you're a large multinational company, to have community sites that are broken down by function. But often think about community sites around things that people are doing, so tasks that they're performing, HR benefits, enrollment, and other things. And then often having your executives participate in those communities. So our Senior Vice President of Human Resources, Lisa Brummel, actively participates in our community sites. And again, she's in there answering questions, which is, again, driving folks to come into the community and participate, because they know that Lisa will be in there reading and answering some of their questions. Search is very useful for identifying and finding content, as well as people, documents, social conversations. And then think about those email alerts. Again, getting those messages to maybe you're someone that isn't as actively engaged, but you know, I got onto my personal site in July. I went ahead and started following a bunch of my coworkers. They all got emails saying, Chris is following you. They clicked on the link. Maybe half of them went ahead and followed and then started to participate in the conversation. You do have the ability within SharePoint to turn off some of the alerts. So if you don't want to be notified every time someone follows you or someone replies to your conversation, you can shut that off. But the default behavior is trying to drive that viral concept where people are participating, they're following people, and using email as a way to kind of engage and reach out to folks. Because we did not mandate that everyone in the company had to use the newsfeed. We didn't say, you know, you need to use this and stop using that tool. We realized that a lot of these capabilities were complementary to some of the other tools they're using. And we wanted to, again, kind of draw people into using these new capabilities. Make sense? So the second scenario is around working with others. So the concept here is maybe it's a group of folks working together on a marketing campaign. Maybe it's salespeople working together on a proposal for a customer. So often, these sorts of collaboration scenarios are typically somewhat ad hoc. You may have structured formal systems for approving things like purchase orders, but sometimes the ad hoc collaboration that's occurring is often happening in an ad hoc, unstructured manner. Maybe you have SharePoint today. People might be using it as a document repository, dropping things in there. Maybe they're using Workflow today. But most often, you're probably finding people are still emailing things around, emailing a document around. If you are using SharePoint sites, you might find that there's some challenges getting a unified view of all the tasks and all the things that you need to accomplish, which, again, might be a barrier to people adopting it. So in this scenario, I want to look at a case where folks might be working together to collaborate on a marketing campaign. So one of the capabilities that we talked about earlier this week is this idea of having tasks and task management with inside of a SharePoint site. Anyone using tasks today in SharePoint? A few of you? Anyone using Project Server on top of SharePoint at all today? A few more? Anyone have a lot of SharePoint team sites with lots of different workflows and tasks? Maybe you have 100 different team sites. What's the typical challenge if you have 100 different team sites with different workflows in there? Aggregating and rolling that up, right? So I have a lot of customers that struggle with that challenge today where they might have all these different sites and people want to use SharePoint for task management, but there's no easy single way of them viewing all of their responsibilities. And I've seen people do a lot of custom solutions where they're trying to build this sort of capability. So one of the things that we've done is we've made it really easy now to aggregate and roll up your tasks across all of your SharePoint sites. If you have personal tasks that you use inside of Microsoft Exchange, if you're using Project Server for full-on project and portfolio and resource management, give you the ability as an end user to have everything kind of aggregated and rolled up into a single place to make it easier. So the hope is that as it becomes easier to find all of your responsibilities, all of your tasks, that people may start to rely more on the workflow and task capabilities because, again, it becomes easier for an end user to see all the tasks assigned to them and to take those tasks offline with them inside of Microsoft Outlook, where most people do their work. So seeing my personal tasks, my team tasks, all rolled up and aggregated inside of a single view. So what I'm showing here is a new capability in SharePoint 2013 around a timeline. So one of the things that you might have noticed if you've used it is that there's ability, and I'll come back to this in a bit, where SharePoint starts talking to you about different capabilities and things that you can do. And one of the things it can do is give you the option for going ahead and actually putting a timeline directly on the homepage of your team site. So if I drill in and look at my team, you can see that I have 5 or 6 different tasks that are out here. Hopefully it's a bit easier now for you to go ahead and edit the list to actually do things really simple like make multiple selections, multiple updates directly in line within like a data grid. So it's much easier to do bulk update, kind of like as if you're working inside of Excel. But I can also go in here and go ahead and say, you know what, this task about creating the campaign name, I want to add it as a milestone task on a timeline. So we still have the concept of having really high-end project management inside a project server. But what we're trying to do is look at project management light, so team-based tasks. So maybe folks that are working together on a marketing campaign or a small project that maybe you don't need full-on portfolio and resource management. You need basic task management that today, maybe you're doing it in a Word document, maybe you're doing it inside of an Excel spreadsheet, to make it really easy and simple for you to do that. And then later on, if you then have multiple sites out there and you want to have this rolled up, make it really easy for I as an individual to see all the tasks assigned to me. The other thing that we've done that we think will make collaboration easier in these scenarios is having the default team site within SharePoint to actually have a OneNote notebook. Anyone not using OneNote today? A few of you? This is something that I find a lot of customers just aren't as familiar with. We use this a lot within Microsoft, and I find a lot of customers either just aren't aware of the capability or aren't leveraging it fully. But working together within a team, doing things like brainstorming, meeting minutes and notes, and having multiple people simultaneously work inside of that OneNote, whether it be in the web browser or whether it be inside of the full OneNote client as I have here, is a really great way of getting people to collaborate together. So I'm part of a team within Microsoft where there might be 10 different people working with the customer. And as we're out meeting with customers and working on a project together, we might all have our different meeting notes. Our notes are synchronized automatically inside of SharePoint so I can see everyone else's notes. But I've also done meetings where we've all been virtual. I might be at home, someone else might be with the customer, and someone else is in a different office. We're talking with the customer and actually simultaneously editing and putting our notes together. Notes coming in. And it's just a great way of working together to brainstorm and work on a deliverable. We also find that, you know, working together on things like PowerPoint presentations and Word documents are great ways of actually collaborating together to work on a deliverable. So one of the things that we've done inside of Office 2013 and SharePoint 2013 is we've gone ahead and added the ability to do collaborative authoring directly inside of a web browser. So in SharePoint and Office 2010, we allowed for the ability inside Word and PowerPoint and OneNote on the desktop and OneNote and Excel on the browser to actually collaboratively author the same document. Well, one of the big pieces of feedback that we got from customers was we might have folks that are working in PowerPoint. They may not be on their work device. They might be on another device with PowerPoint not installed. They want to co-author work in a PowerPoint presentation with others. So in this case, I'm actually over here logged in as Garth editing a slide, and I can actually do things like add inline commenting. So think about adding comments, so not just working on slides, but actually having some rich discussion and dialogue that's preserved within the document. So as I'm inside of this document here as Garth, if I come back over and look at things as me and go over to this PowerPoint presentation and start to edit this, I'm going to see that Garth is in there working in the same document at the same time. So you see down at the bottom here, Garth is also editing this document. And this is something we use a lot, and that's really starting to drive adoption for us around having multiple people working in the same presentation at the same time or working inside of the same Word document at the same time. Think about RFPs, so request for proposal and those responses. Think about contracts. Think about legal documents. Think about, again, these business scenarios that folks might be struggling with today. They might be breaking a document up into 15 different documents, and someone has the task at the end of the day to aggregate and roll up all those documents into a single unified view. So having that ability to work together collaboratively and do things like, again, working together and seeing those notes directly within here. So if I look at my comments, again, just like what Garth was seeing in the browser, I have that ability to go in there and view things and see their presence and instant message, et cetera, directly in the context of what we're doing. So again, this to me is, again, low-hanging fruit. Most of what I'm showing you are just native out-of-the-box SharePoint capabilities without custom development, without a long lead time to get these features implemented. And these are scenarios that often when I'm talking with customers about getting started, that either they're just not aware of or they're not evangelizing within their company in a business context. So going back to the concept around task management, again, if I look at my personal site, aggregated rolled up view of my personal tasks that I've assigned to myself. I have these marketing tasks from the marketing site and this task assigned to me from the ZT 2000 launch. So I'm seeing all of my responsibilities, things that are important and upcoming, things that I've completed. And again, I have the option to go ahead and synchronize all of these tasks that are assigned to me directly to Outlook. So if I'm on a plane, I can see all the tables, I can review them, I can update them. And then when I connect, things will synchronize directly up to my site. Again, making it much easier for me to collaborate and work on those deliverables that I have to do. The other thing that is something that I think is unique as you're thinking about kind of evangelizing these capabilities is I asked that question earlier about needing help with the campaign. Well, I can go ahead and flag this conversation for follow-up, which when I do that, it actually goes ahead and adds a task for me as a personal task to remind me later on that I posted this question socially. Well, I want to go ahead and remember that later on, a week from now, I asked this question and I didn't get an answer. So having that ability to actually make social more actionable, again, to me, helps make social more valuable because it's not just about putting videos and blog posts, et cetera. It's actually having the ability to get my job done. So often, again, I use this a lot for posting questions, flagging them for follow-up, and actually going ahead and finding things that I need to work on. So the key elements that we saw, again, in that scenario, concepts around the timeline, working together within a team site, having those tasks, identifying those tasks as things that are important milestone without being a full-on project manager just directly with inside of a SharePoint site. We talked about how tasks can be rolled up and aggregated and viewed across all of the different sites that I'm a member of that I have tasks assigned to. And those tasks can also be viewed across my personal tasks inside of Exchange and Project. We talked about using shared notebooks both in a browser as well as directly in the OneNote client to do collaborative authoring and note-taking directly inside of a shared notebook together. And we talked about collaborative authoring on things like Word documents and PowerPoint presentations, Excel spreadsheets in a browser to, again, get folks to think about SharePoint as more than just that place where I drop my files. And maybe I'm using workflow, maybe I'm using version management, check-in and check-out, and actually make it about a place where I can work together with others to actually get my proposal done, my presentation done, much quicker than another way I might be doing things today. Any of you using collaborative authoring just out of curiosity today? Are you finding that it's been helpful? Are you finding that it's, I mean, how are you making folks aware that they can do that capability? Yep. Yeah. Yeah, so the comment is they're working on, you know, 2010 today, and they're using check-in and check-out and versioning and workflow, et cetera, and using that to route things around and finding the value and kind of collaborating and getting others' feedback and adding comments and notes, et cetera. So the next scenario, and this is actually a big use case that one of my customers that's an early adopter was going after, and one of the reasons why they're starting with SharePoint 2013 is flexible work styles. They're finding that they have a lot of folks that are doing bring-your-own-device, mobile devices, a lot of folks that are disconnected from their work today, and they want to have the ability to work with things together. They might be working with things like Box or Dropbox today that the IT team doesn't want them using because it may not be managed and regulated, et cetera, even our consumer SkyDrive. So the scenario that they're trying to wrestle with is a mobile worker that needs anywhere, anytime access to stay connected and get their job done. Do most of you have kind of a flexible work program? Even if you're still in the office, you're allowing folks to spend some portion of their time on the road, whether it be sales folks, et cetera. So this is a scenario that I find is actually one of the real early scenarios that a lot of folks go after, is trying to engage folks that are, mobile remote workers. And the example that, I think might be a good use case for this is how we're actually working with things like SkyDrive Pro. So with inside of Microsoft, again, the first thing that we implemented in 2013 is we started off working in Office 365. We went ahead and put our personal sites and a lot of our team sites in SharePoint Online and SharePoint 2013. And the big reason why we started to do that is we wanted to enable people working with inside of Microsoft to have access to their personal documents from a home machine, from a kiosk, from a mobile device. And you could do it inside of SharePoint 2010, but it was something that our IT group actually never opened up on premises because they just had some security concerns and challenges, and they just actually did not allow us to connect with our mobile devices. They opened that up inside of Office 365 for us to connect to this service from wherever we are. So using SkyDrive Pro, which again, you probably saw some of the examples earlier in the week where folks can do things like drag and drop. And as you probably have seen, if you go ahead and synchronize with the SkyDrive Pro client, as I do that, I actually have an offline copy of those documents. So as I'm going ahead and I'm working, my documents are being stored locally. When I reconnect, it synchronizes my changes up to the server. That same SkyDrive Pro client is actually available to you within your team site. So if I actually go back here, and I'm logged in as Garth here, but team site, and I look at the library, I have the option to actually go ahead and synchronize that library offline with SkyDrive Pro. So again, having that ability to take not just your personal SkyDrive, but also have the ability to take a team site offline, again, and be able to work with that offline and as people are updating things, have them synchronized to you, is something that folks are finding value in. The other scenario that Office 365 is enabling, beyond just having the ability to connect to this site from anywhere, is this concept of Office on Demand. So if I click into this, what Office on Demand is, something that, again, you can choose to enable or disable, is I think about a scenario where you might be traveling, you might be on another family member's machine, you might be on a kiosk, and Office 2013 is not installed on that device. And you might start off working with the document in the browser, but you might find that there's just some capability that you need the full Office client to use. So what Office on Demand allows you to do is it allows you to go ahead and use Office 2013 on any device. So if I'm working on a machine, I will go ahead, without being an administrator on the machine, download a copy of that program, let you use it to make all the edits and changes, and then when you're done, delete the local copy of the program, delete the local copy of the file, and allow you to have that anywhere access. So by using Office through Office 365, you get not just the ability to use Office on demand, but you also get the rights to use Office on up to 5 devices, PC or Mac, as well as up to 5 mobile devices. So they talked earlier in the week about having Office mobile applications on Windows Phone, but also having the ability to use the SharePoint social and mobile app on the iOS devices, but also using the Office web applications to view and edit documents from an iPad, from an iPhone, from an Android device. Again, connect to that service, so if I'm on these other devices, I can view and access and edit those documents directly within the browser without having to worry about, VPNing into a network and getting connectivity to that server. I'm exposing information. The other thing that I can do, though, is once I post these documents, and I do this a lot, again, with inside of Microsoft, I might be posting a document that I am working on, and I might want to go ahead and get some additional feedback even while I'm on the go. So having the ability to post a document to my SkyDrive Pro and put it into my Shared with Everyone folder, which by default makes that document view only for others in the company, but I could either inside of the Office client or directly with inside of SharePoint say that I want to go ahead and share this document. So maybe I want to go ahead and get some input from Garth and very quickly type in Garth's name and have it tell me who Garth is. and just ask Garth to go ahead and give me some feedback on this. And very simply, go ahead and say, you can view this or you can edit this. So now I'm going to think about complex SharePoint permissions, which typically is a barrier for the average end user to go ahead and share things because they may not understand how permissions are done with inside of SharePoint. And frankly, they usually don't care. They're looking at consumer services like SkyDrive and Google Drive and other things that are just really simple to post a document for yourself and then open up and share that document. Again, of course, the folks that are IT in the room, you can control this. You can turn off some of the sharing capabilities. If you want to, you can enable external sharing. So often a scenario is, I'm working on this, and maybe it's not someone within the company that I want to work with. Maybe it's somebody that is outside of the company, and maybe they're not a user that's inside of my network. So having the ability to go ahead and invite an external person in to participate just using their Microsoft account or their Gmail account or whatever other account they're using and invite them into either document is a scenario for, this isn't cutting out really bad, to participate in that scenario without having to, you know, think about getting IT involved with creating the user account and how do I get them to log in and what's my login. Just invite them with their regular credentials, invite them in to collaborate as well. With, again, having the ability, if IT chooses, to turn off this capability or maybe only enable it for certain sites that are classified as being okay for external sharing. The other aspect within here, as I mentioned before, was having that mobile experience. So again, I showed you earlier having that ability to go ahead and, you know, use your mobile device to go ahead and, you know, take a photo or respond to something within a news feed or see people or tags that you're following and participate in that communication. Again, one of the big drivers for some of the social tools that are out there that are being adopted pretty heavily is mobile applications and mobile access. So not having to be logged into my machine to see what's up on Facebook or Twitter and go ahead and blast comments out. So a lot of the tweets that are happening at the conference, you know, some of them are on folks' machine. A lot of folks with the internet access issues this week, right, may not be using their device. They might be on their mobile device and actually reviewing, tweeting, et cetera. I see a lot of heads nodding, and on behalf of Microsoft and Facility, I apologize for any of the internet access challenges this week. But again, a lot of, even though there were internet access challenges, folks had mobile applications and mobile access, and the conversation was still communicating and still happening, even without having access to the internet. You know, just having that mobile access and having your mobile device is another way of engaging folks in collaborating. So I didn't actually have one of those fancy, you know, those Elmo devices with the ability to actually do the overhead of my phone. So I did what I think is kind of the next best thing was I took kind of a sideways picture, so if you kind of lean a little bit, this is my my phone. And what I'm showing here is having the ability from, this in case is my Windows phone, the ability to view my newsfeed. So this is the everyone view. So I can see from my phone the conversation with everyone that I'm following, the tags, the people, the sites that I'm following. I can see comments that others are making and do things like add a reply. If you look at the bottom here, you can see that I can also go in there and at mention someone. I can mark something with a hashtag, and I can even take a photo and upload the photo directly within here. I can like those comments as well. I can see all the people that I'm following directly from my mobile device, and then actually click into there, and based on the information that's about them in their profile, I can see their phone number, I can see their email address, I can send them an email, I can make a phone call. Again, without that person necessarily being a contact that's inside of my contacts information on my phone. So again, think about a case where you're out there, you discover someone else in the company, they post a question, it might be a lengthy answer, you don't want to type out the answer on your phone, but hey, you know what, this is a pretty critical thing, I want to get back to Garth. Maybe I'll just get his phone number directly from there without connecting to the corporate network or emailing Garth and saying, what's your phone number, can I call you? Just having that ability to see a message, a conversation, contribute to it, find that person, and actually go ahead and find their contact information, their phone number, and then go ahead and contact them directly from my mobile device. And then lastly, just showing you the view of all the different social tags that are out there. So recent tags that I've used, tags that I'm following. So again, very quickly on the go, staying connected to the people, the topics that I'm interested in. And not just having an email alert, but also having the ability to participate in that conversation even while I'm on the go. So the key parts of this scenario again, was Office 365. And again, you can do a lot of this on-premises. Office 365, by virtue of being a service, is something that is automatically accessible from whatever device you're working on. You don't have to worry about making that service accessible to people when they're not on the corporate network. We talked about Office on Demand, which again was that case where maybe I'm working on a document and I'm on the road and that machine I'm on doesn't have a full copy of Office installed. And maybe the browser-based version of Office, you know, just doesn't have that feature. You know, the browser-based versions of, you know, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, and OneNote, I think are good. We've made a lot of investments in them in this release. But there still are some things that you just can't do in the browser-based version of Word. Things like mail merges, et cetera, just don't work in the browser. It's very similar to folks that might be using Microsoft Exchange and Outlook. If you ever use the kiosk, you use Outlook Web Access, which I think we've had for 4 or 5 releases now. Technically, you could use that without using Outlook, but most people still choose to use the rich Outlook client for doing their email, even though they have the choice of using the browser-based version of Outlook. So we often find that even with the browser companions, folks still want the ability to have a full copy of Office, sometimes to do certain tasks because it's just that much more efficient. So we're enabling that ability to have Office on Demand kind of stream down very quickly to your device, let you do what you're doing, and then when you're done, it just goes away without you having to get, you know, permission to install the application on the machine and worrying about licensing and other things that might be as part of that scenario. We talked about SkyDrive Pro, which again is something that's new in SharePoint 2013 that's built on top of the personal site. So this is something that, again, if you're worried about consumer file sharing services like the SkyDrive consumer servers or Box or Dropbox, you know, I often find that IT can't just tell the business, no, you can't do that without having an alternative because people need to do these capabilities to get their job done. So a lot of my customers are looking at potentially using SkyDrive Pro as one of the first applications they do in SharePoint 2013 because they're getting so many requests for external file sharing scenarios because folks might want to have the ability to collaborate on a file or the file is just too large to send via email and they want to post that file and then send a link. So a lot of folks have been asking us for this sort of capability. And then lastly, the mobile applications. So we talked about having the ability to work with social information as well as to have the browser-based versions of Office on the Android devices and the iOS devices to actually work with and view those documents while you're on the go. So the last scenario is really around learning SharePoint. So in this case, you know, think about a person that's a new employee. They join the company, they join a team, and again, they don't want to necessarily learn SharePoint, but that's the tool that's being chosen for the job. So they don't come in necessarily and say, I want to learn how to use SharePoint today. They say, hey, I'm part of the marketing team. The marketing team's using the site to collaborate. Maybe I've just been knighted the person that's the site owner, and hopefully I've gotten some training. Hopefully a lot of the great things that Sue talked about training and learning and readiness and internal user groups, et cetera. But often sometimes those things aren't enough. And one of the things that Jeff Teeper has talked about the last 2 SharePoint conferences was our conscious desire in this release to spend more time thinking about the end user. You know, the prior 4 releases, you know, we focused a lot of time on building functionality and capabilities, really focused at consolidating technologies, but really had an IT focus in a lot of cases. So some of the messaging, the language, and part of the feedback we got even with SharePoint 2010 was that things like the My Site, even though we've had that in the product since 2003, just really wasn't familiar to folks. And part of the adoption challenge was that the way that you worked with the product was not as familiar with some of the consumer services, how things were messaged and how things were used. So again, I'm not saying it's perfect and that everything that we did is necessarily going to resonate 100% with your end users. And you know, I'm not saying to stop doing training and communication. What I'm saying is that we spent a lot of time in this release, 4 times the number of user experience developers, thinking about the end user, thinking about end-to-end business scenarios, and thinking about how the product talks to the end user. So in this scenario, just wanted to go back to our marketing site here. And this is where things like the, you know, getting started with your site. So again, we had the getting started links and other things before that were on the site. But we try to make it really easy for someone that is a new site designer or a new site owner, as an example, or someone that's participating within a site, to hopefully make it very simple for them to find and discover the tasks that they need to do. So we've done things like trying to remove the ribbon by default from showing there because sometimes people are overwhelmed. They log into the site, and there's all these commands and actions that are just visible in their face. We try to make certain actions much more prominent, so making it really easy, if you have the permission, to share, to follow the site, to sync it offline. We also wanted to have consistent navigation elements that are always present across the site. So as an example, in this case, I'm using Office 365. So I have my email, my calendar, my people, so all of my Exchange capabilities integrated directly in this banner. If you were just using SharePoint, though, you would see your newsfeed. You'd see your SkyDrive. You'd also see things like your sites, which this is something a lot of customers asked about, was having personal favorites to go ahead and, you know, say, I want to go and find this site later on or find this document. So making it really easy for me to follow sites and documents so I can get back to them later on, regardless of the device that I'm on. Because one of the challenges with folks having multiple devices, mobile devices, multiple laptops, iPads, what have you, is that your favorites may not always follow you. So if you're on a different device, you want to very quickly go in and find that favorite site or that favorite document that you were looking for. You might have also noticed that things like when I'm working inside of SkyDrive, it shows you things like recent documents. So as I log on to the site, it remembers who I am and my profile. Even the Office clients roam with me. So they remember my settings. They remember the recent documents that I was working on. And they even remember the section within the document I was last on. So again, having that ability to roam with me and follow with me, which again, hopefully will encourage people to want to put their documents with inside of SharePoint, because those capabilities just don't exist if you're just storing them locally or emailing those files around. So if I go back to the site, and I look at my marketing campaign site, you know, we talked about, you know, the language of how SharePoint talks to folks. We talked about the getting started. Another big thing that we wanted to do within this release is look at how you're adding applications. So I'm assuming that most of you are familiar with apps, right? Whether you're using your iPhone, hopefully your Windows device, your Android device, Windows 8, everyone, everywhere kind of has an app. And you know, we have the application marketplace with inside of Windows and Windows Phone. We wanted to make it just as easy for end users to discover applications that might be developed by their IT group or applications that might be available from third parties, from our partners. So there's this SharePoint store that exists, and there's an Office store out there that makes it very simple to discover and identify applications that might fill a need for you. So a lot of things with inside of SharePoint are referred to as apps now. We try to make it very easy to discover new apps that are out there. Companies can decide if they want to allow their end users to go to the public application marketplace. They can also develop their own private corporate marketplace where maybe corporate developed applications are available for end users to use on their site. You can certainly put them as part of a site template so they don't have to go out there and get them. We wanted to make it really easy for folks to discover and add a new corporate application or a public application and manage the licenses and things like that. So it makes it really, really easy, just like on your mobile device, to find and discover and work with an app. So I've already gone ahead and brought an app into my site. If I go to my marketing site for a second, I've gone ahead and downloaded a free app to help me look at the world clock and weather. And again, these applications can talk to other applications. They can talk to your systems if you want. But very quickly, I just went ahead and added an app from the public marketplace that gives me the ability to show the weather in Las Vegas. And it looks like we still have a couple of good sunny days around 60s or 70s here. But think about cases where maybe you're an end user that's working on a travel site or something where you're booking something and you want to have, you know, a weather app that's showing within your site. Or you want to go ahead and buy, you know, a workflow application or a social application or whatever it is that you feel like SharePoint may not necessarily do for you out of the box. You want to discover and find these applications and not have to go through this whole process of buying it, certifying it, getting it tested, getting it deployed. Having the ability to go ahead and find, discover, purchase, and consume these applications, I set this up in less than 2 minutes. Went out to the application catalog, found the app, said add the app, and it installed into my site. And I'm doing this in Office 365, so it's not something, you know, like I need to get someone involved to install an application on the server. I can just go ahead and discover and use that app directly within my site. The last big thing I wanted to mention around hopefully helping users to learn more about SharePoint quicker is, I think Sue referred to it as kind of the, you know, going to the long wow as opposed to the big bang, and having, you know, us move towards a more regular release cycle, so releasing new updates quarterly as opposed to every 3 years, I think in the long run will make it easier for folks to learn new capabilities, because it won't be like what it is right now where every 3 years we're shipping this huge release of SharePoint, this huge release of Exchange, in Office, and maybe the user interface changed. So maybe the, you know, the site settings move from the left to the right and back and forth again, and you've got to retrain folks. So it allows us to introduce new changes in smaller chunks. It hopefully will allow you to introduce them to your end users in smaller chunks. So it's not this huge, monolithic, massive release that you need to then go out and train someone on all of these things that are new. So hopefully us moving to a much more frequent release cycle will make it easier to adopt. It'll also hopefully help us to be more responsive. So we talked about this on Monday. One of the things we're learning from Yammer is how they are using their cloud service to get information on what users like. So they do a lot of what's known as A/B testing with their free users, where they'll put multiple versions of an application out there, and they'll see which features are being used, which things are having the most success, which things are having errors and bugs, and it allows them to be much more responsive. So as part of their, you know, in their case, weekly or monthly updates, getting updates out there sooner and quicker so that it's not something like currently where it took us 3 years to get new social features implemented into the core SharePoint platform. Hopefully it'll let us be much more responsive and quicker for getting these things out there to you, but also allow your end users to adopt them because, again, you're able to have much more targeted, specific communication. It also allows you to have another opportunity to engage folks in release communication. So one of the great things to drive adoption is having a reason to continue to engage. So if you're only engaging with your end users every 3 years, which hopefully you're not doing, it's not really best practice anyways, but because we're doing this update, you know, you have a regular opportunity to engage, and we have an opportunity to engage with you to say, here's what's coming in the next service release. These are the new capabilities. This is hopefully what the business value is. This is when you'll see it. Here you can plan for your communication and updates. And again, you're regularly engaging, as well as it allows us to be much more agile and nimble and responsive to things that are changing. So not just taking 3 years to do something and then, you know, the market's changed, the market's moved, and, you know, now we're behind in something because we weren't responding as quickly. So hopefully, you know, what we're doing here in the cloud and then obviously updating more frequently on premises as well will help us to get new capabilities to you sooner, which will hopefully in turn help you to adopt them more soon within your company. You doing all right? Good? All right. So the key elements we saw here, we talked about the getting started, again, having those live tiles that are hopefully much more actionable to let people know what they need to do once they get to a site. We talked about the general look and feel, so the messaging, how SharePoint talks to you. In some cases, I find it kind of funny, so some of the products I think maybe a little too cute, hopefully not on the clippy border where it's, hey, it looks like you're writing a letter here, but trying to be more personable and friendly, right? So, you know, sorry to keep you waiting. Just basic language and communication, messaging, things like how we do sharing, as I mentioned, to make it really easy for someone to just share something, not talk about, gee, I'm breaking permission inheritance. Is that good or bad? The average end user doesn't understand what permission inheritance is. You know, my wife thinks about inheritance as something that we may get from our parents when they pass on. And do I want to break inheritance? Yeah, I don't know what that really means. What does that mean to an end user? So making it easy to go ahead and share things. The language that we talked about, as well as hopefully these shorter release cycles to make it easier for you to digest all of the changes that we're releasing. So I'm going to try and summarize now what the top 10 list was. So we talked about at the beginning, you know, I was going to have this top 10 list of capabilities. I didn't want to just jump into the capabilities without having some scenarios to kind of ground around because, again, just having features and functions without having real business use cases and scenarios, to me, often wasn't as valuable with communicating these capabilities to my end users. So number one, I think, is around the community sites. The key capabilities here that I think, and again, Sue and I have a very healthy debate, we're working together on the social chapter for Essential SharePoint 2013. We've had a lot of discussion on things like badges and ratings and how do you kind of manage that and what are the cultural implications of these things. But the concept of gamification, having badges, having likes and ratings in some companies and some cultures might be something that's useful for driving adoption. Having that concept of best replies and reputations should hopefully help and encourage folks to use the community sites over just using email, where again, they might have emails and how do you know if the right answer is there and what if you miss that conversation? Number nine is again, news feeds. So again, having the ability to mention someone, see the top trending tags, have recommendations for new sites, new people to follow, having those email notifications sent to you to engage. Chris is following you. What does that mean? Let me check this out. Let me go there. Oh, this kind of looks like Facebook, LinkedIn. Look, I can follow people. I can follow sites. I can follow tags. By default, we automatically have you follow anyone in your organization. So if you have, you're under the same manager, all of your peers, you automatically follow. and any subordinates that you might have within kind of the first level, if you're a manager, you'll follow them automatically as well. So you don't just show up to your site and have an empty site. Because again, one of the great things when you're launching is not just having an empty house, that people go there and they try to figure out, what do I do? So if you think about how people, you know, stage houses when you're selling a house, it's often very difficult to just have an empty house with no furniture, because not everyone can visualize, this is where the bed would go, this is where the furniture would go. So a lot of people, when they're selling the house, actually spend time staging the house, so people can think about what they could do in the house and how they could live there. So think about, you know, getting some early adopters, getting some vibrant communities, engaging that first 25 to 50% in that adoption chart to be the early adopters, and then get them into those sites to have some content, have a vibrant community that people are joining, so they can see what they do when they get there. Not, hey, I log in, it's empty, I'm not coming back again, why did I go there? It's kind of a dead end, it's a blank screen, and you lost me on the first time that I went to use that site. We talked about Office 365 as an example. So again, having that anywhere access, regardless of the mobile device that I'm on, my PC, my laptop, my Mac, iPhone, iPad, Android device, having that anywhere access. We talked about the Office on Demand, having the ability to use Office from different devices. We talked about having that regular release cadence of, you know, quarterly updates to the service. And we talked about things like external sharing, which, again, if you want to enable it, to allow people to invite others that may not be part of your company in to participate in a particular team set or document, maybe share a document with them through SkyDrive Pro. We talked about mobile applications. So we talked about in the context of social. So obviously the ability to have a social app that's native to the device for Windows and iOS devices to do things like seeing who you're following, your tags, participate in those conversations. We talked about, you know, the mobile web applications, the web application companions. So again, if you're on a device that we don't have a version for Office yet, having the ability to, you know, work with Word, Excel, and PowerPoint on an Android device using Chrome. We also have a concept, and this is a bit more technical, but it's called Channels, which allows you to have SharePoint pages rendered to understand the device that's coming in. So if I'm hitting a web page on, again, an iOS device or an Android device, the page can interpret the capabilities of the device and render it in a format that that device understands, so kind of optimizing for the device that you're on. So again, you don't have a lot of scrolling when you're hitting the site. So a good example of this is anyone use their mobile device to go to the MySPC website on like an Android device, an iOS device? In the mobile experience, I'm thinking it was pretty good, right? It actually, no, not so much. I only hit it on a Windows phone without the app. For me, when I loaded it up in the browser, it just had, you know, tiles and there wasn't a lot of scrolling, and it was pretty responsive versus the page that I saw on my, you know, my PC had a lot more content. The content was actually optimized for the device that I was on. And then again, SkyDrive Pro accessible from various mobile clients as well. We talked about search. So we talked about the concept of finding documents and people and social conversations. We talked about previews. So when I hover over a document, seeing a live preview of Word, Excel, PowerPoint, having the ability to jump into that section. But we also have things like making the search results actionable. So if you see on the bottom right-hand side here, not only can I see that this document was modified by me, there's often showing you the number of views, so how often a document has been viewed, whether it's showing up with inside of someone clicked through it in the search results or they viewed the document directly by navigating to the site. Also having the ability to follow that document directly or send that document as a link to somebody else. So again, not just finding the results, but making it actionable to join the community, to view the document, to view the person's personal site. We looked at tasks. We looked at the team-based task view, things like the timeline, so I can look at within my marketing team site all the different tasks that are assigned to me. But we also looked at the personal view, where I can look at, I as an individual can see my personal tasks that either I created for myself, or I flagged something in my newsfeed for follow-up, or looking at all the different tasks that are assigned to me, either individually or via a workflow, to see all of my rolled up tasks across the 20, 30, 50 sites that I'm a member of, to have a single view of all of the obligations I have, and then have that ability to bring those tasks with me into Outlook, where again, I can work with those tasks offline. SkyDrive Pro, again, has that capability to synchronize and take my documents with me offline, have that ability to have those documents integrated directly into Windows Explorer, so it looks and feels just like the file system. And when I update a document, either in my personal site or a team site that I'm synchronizing offline, those documents, when I connect, just synchronize automatically. So the next time I hop on a plane, those documents are there. We also have, as we mentioned before, SkyDrive Consumer, which has very similar capabilities from a consumer perspective. And again, our desire is to make it very similar and familiar from the consumer perspective to the business perspective. So if an end user is used to using the consumer-free SkyDrive service, which is much more prominent in things like Windows 8 and Windows Phone, making it hopefully just as easy for them to transition to SkyDrive Pro, which is managed through SharePoint. And looking at things like drag and drop as well, you know, as you saw in the keynote earlier in the week, taking a document and drag and dropping right inside of the browser, regardless of what browser you're using and regardless of what operating system you're using on your device. Sharing was the scenario of having really easy ability to invite people if they're inside of the company and making it easy to have actions, like they can view this, they can edit this, without thinking about permission inheritance and groups and things like that, as well as sending email alerts to, again, engage them and bring them into the site, including external access as well. Collaboration was the scenario where we looked at collaborative authoring inside of the web browser, inside of the rich office clients. We looked at commenting in line, so having the ability not just to work together in the document at the same time, but think about a scenario where maybe I'm offline, and today you can do comments, but you couldn't really have a threaded discussion. So if there are a lot of people involved, you can see here that I'm replying to Garth's comment, so kind of a threaded discussion directly attached to the document, as opposed to a bunch of comments that are all at the same level. So think about a case where three or four people are having a conversation around a particular slide or section, and have that threaded conversation become an artifact that's actually part of the document, as well as having things like presence. So seeing I'm working in the document, here's Garth, his presence is online, I can instant message him, I can phone call directly from within that document. And then also doing things like shared notebooks for things like brainstorming and meeting notes, et cetera. And then lastly, hopefully, you're seeing the end user focus. So try to make things more prominent, like having the news feed be the default as part of a team site, having this getting started capability there, the general look and feel, and then hopefully how we're doing the new application marketplace to make it easy for an end user with the right permissions to go ahead and find and discover an application that they can embed into their site, which will hopefully, again, make them want to use the solution because the applications that they need are there to help them do their task. So wrapping up, we've got about 5 minutes left, which I think is good for some additional Q&A at the end here. The keys, again, think about solving a business problem. As you're rolling the solution out, think about, I presented four different use case scenarios. I suggest finding your own use case examples, finding things through pilots that actually resonate, finding different divisions, different individuals within those divisions that might be those early adopters that we talked about earlier, that might be more open to leveraging a new solution to try to accomplish a task differently, but then using their case studies, using their feedback as marketing internally. So you think about how Microsoft rolls out our products. We identify a number of early adopters. Sue has a customer that's an early adopter. I have a customer that's an early adopter. Well, we leverage their feedback within the product, but we also leverage that for case studies. And then we give those case studies to our customers as references to say, well, companies that are doing X, Y, and Z, here's the benefits that they gained, which hopefully will encourage you to want to use it. Well, inside of IT, I also often try to find my own internal case studies. So these are the folks in marketing. This is a business problem that was solved within marketing or sales or HR, and use those case studies to actually then market back to others within the company to say, here's how this technology can solve your problem. Cultivate rewards, so find those early adopters and reward them, incent them to keep contributing. Recognize and publicize them. So one way could be by using the badges and the reputation scores within a community site, but it could be even more simple. So the example I mentioned before about how we had our Academy solution where people uploaded videos and we gave them points for actually uploading and having highly rated content, and we celebrated them. We gave them rewards, but we also identified through newsletters and other top trending things within the site who the top contributors were within a site, and we publicized those top individuals as, you know, top performers. And really seek to try to make it viral. I know that, you know, a lot of times folks that are creating new marketing videos and putting them on YouTube, part of what they're trying to do is, how do we find that video that just goes viral, right? So that everyone will want to share this with their friend. Everyone will want to go ahead and recommend this to others. So you think about the second 50% on that adoption graph, those folks that are waiting for others to kind of go first, or they're waiting to see that there's some benefit. So how do you get these other people to be spokespersons and want to share it with others, want to recommend it to others, want to like it, and again, promote it to others, and kind of make that solution go viral? So a few resources that might help you on the journey. This is not one of my kids. Unfortunately, he's a boy, and I've got four girls. But anyone ever use the Microsoft Experience Center? Anyone ever hear of this before? Wow, like three of you. Okay, so let me spend a few seconds talking about what this is. So Microsoft, a few years back, started to invest in something that in some parts of the world we call it the Customer Experience Center. We call it CIE, the Customer Immersion Experience. Within the US, we call it the Microsoft Experience Center. What this is these are end-user-focused scenarios, kind of end-user hands-on labs, if you would. It's 10 laptops, it's mobile devices, it's a set of servers. What we do is we walk you through a facilitated day-in-the-life scenario. There's five different modules in the scenario that start with things like having a business challenge that might be working an email, working together to collaborate to solve a problem, finding a subject matter expert, all the way to the end of I'm done with the proposal and I want to go ahead and have a meeting to present it out. And really the point of us doing this is not to have a death by PowerPoint, not to have the Microsoft folks demoing these things. It's really like when you go to buy a car. You know, you can go in there and you can see the car and the salesperson can talk to you about it. But until you take the car for a test drive, you don't know if you can actually visualize and see what it would be like to take the car home with you. So what we want to allow you to do is use the Experience Center as a way of actually bringing in some business folks, potentially your IT counterparts with you, not just from the perspective of before you buy the technology, but even after you buy the technology, because we want to help you to deploy and adopt what you own. So what we do here is we actually will facilitate the scenarios anywhere from a couple of hours. I've seen as short as an hour for an executive experience to a full day. And we'll actually walk through these scenarios with you. And then what happens is at the end of it, we typically pause after each module and say, well, how do you do this today? How do you solve this business challenge today? We usually come out with 10 or 15 different use cases in business terms. And then the end of the meeting is often us prioritizing which key initiatives they're going to go after first. What's the low-hanging fruit? And then we work with the IT counterparts to say, okay, what are the dependencies? What's the software you need to do? What's the order you need to roll it out? Are there benefits that you have through your Microsoft contract to bring a partner in to help you do the deployment? But we really use this to try to not focus on the technology, and focus on end-user business scenarios. These are a number of different resources. Again, you're going to get these slides. Sue and Scott Jamieson had a couple of good adoption and usage best practices white papers for 2010. Still very relevant in 2013. It's not necessarily about the technology, it's about the patterns and the techniques that they recommended. End-user SharePoint's a great site from end-user perspective to see and collaborate with others. Sadie Van Buren has a SharePoint maturity model, which talks about if you're looking at going from a level 100 competency in content management or search, what are the things that typical organizations are doing to be more mature with using a particular capability? Lots of SharePoint Saturdays and user groups that happen out there to talk with your colleagues, your peers that are out there. Again, the SharePoint 2010 book, and I have a blog post that I did on getting started with SharePoint 2013, which is actually a bit more around the IT pros and developers, to be honest, but I put some links to some free training resources and videos for developers and IT pros, as well as some links to where you can go ahead and sign up for a free trial for Office 365, and it's running the same version as my demo was, so it's the near final version of the service that'll be launched early next year. So you can actually go in there, and if you want, in about 5 minutes, create a brand new 2013 environment with all the products all integrated, and then go ahead and start experiencing this and start thinking about business scenarios and use cases that you may want to pilot. So anyone that didn't go to Sue's session right before this one, I encourage you to check it out on demand. Anyone that is looking for another session that's going to start up in about half an hour, I encourage you to check out Todd Ray's session at 5 o'clock around taking some of these concepts in developing ROI. So how do we go from adoption to business value? So it's great to get adoption, but how do we measure adoption? How do we know if we have the right adoption happening? So I'm right at about the end of my time here. I'm happy to stay up here and take a few questions. Sue, that's the blue book. I know we got to get the purple one out there. But hopefully that book will be coming out soon in the purple color. It'll look a lot like the green one, but only purple. But I mentioned, again, I've got five women at home, so I'm very used to not getting my way. So I'm going to go along. We're going to have the purple cover there, and Sue's cringing at me, so I'm going to hear about this. But basically, there's my contact information. I appreciate you coming out. I appreciate you staying with us for the last 75 minutes. And please, if you get the time, fill out your survey. I appreciate